Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes a Spider-Man.
Hey, yo, and here we go. It is We Talk Comics, episode, I'm going to say 123. I'm not sure we numbered the last one. I think I said a number, but it didn't go on the website with a number. So we're going to say 123. Maybe we have to backtrack later and do 122 if I missed it. I am your host, Keith. I am joined by a regular co-host, Chris.
Hey, how are we doing this week? You know what? This week, I'm kind of pissed because we're 2 weeks into 2015, no hoverboard, and we still only have 4 Jaws movies. I'm beginning to think Canadian treasure Michael J. Fox may have fibbed to me.
However, we are getting a 13th Friday the 13th movie. So I think I'm still... And I have my phone can access the entirety of human knowledge. So I think I'm still ahead on points. I've never been able to ride a skateboard, so I wouldn't have been any better at a hoverboard anyway.
But the only thing that movie got right was Pepsi Max, man.
They called it Pepsi Perfect.
So there, I'll still give him some points. And we have a guest this week. Brian, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Brian.
What's your last name?
You need more than that?
What's your last name and how did you get here?
I'm Brian Bisaggio. I'm a comic writer, creator of currently running series Stronghold and the forthcoming Andrew Jackson in Space, which is exactly as awesome as it sounds.
I was thinking today about how is Brian going to explain the pitch for Andrew Jackson in Space? And as I said, I think that is the whole pitch. You just say Andrew
that's Jackson the pitch. In Space. Like, I mean, there's more detail, but that's that's kind of all you need to know going in to enjoy.
And why would you pick the least popular member of the Jackson 5?
Well, you know, just Tito Jackson in Space just didn't have the same kick.
It was all about...
I think if I'd gone with Randy, people would have been confused and thought I met the guy from, you know, American Idol.
I guess that...
I don't even know who that is.
This is that's the least natural next question is, of course, do you go with other presidents in space as a sequel, or do you go with other Jacksons?
neither? definitely not doing any other historical figures in space. I'm not planning on doing... celebrities in space as like that being my thing. God, if that's my thing, shoot me.
there are worse things than finding your niche. That's I'm just
yeah, but if that's your niche, you know, like so can you imagine the tombstone of the guy who made his career, you know, doing comic books about historical figures in space?
It's still the gravestone of a dude who made comics every day.
It's still what?
It's still the gravestone of a dude that made comics every day. And that's better than
Dick Pages. Oh man, that's a good point. That's a good point. That's God willing, I can pull that off.
All right, well let's. We will come back to Andrew Jackson's face in just a minute. It has been a while since we did a regular episode of the podcast, Chris. What have you been reading? What have you been enjoying?
Really, I've been catching up on everything that I said I read last year. catching up on my Booster Golds. Catching up on my Avengers Undercover, which I absolutely love. I was really surprised about that. I wasn't expecting to like the new incarnation. Moon Knight, which Keith you recommended to me, the Warren Ellis version. I finally read the first five five glorious single issue stories of that particular run. And you know what? I don't need to continue past the Warren Ellis version. So there's that.
Yeah,
but Class Moon Knight. Mark Spector Moon Knight. Nothing could take that away from me.
No.
I still love Moon Knight back in the 90s.
See, I've always had a problem with Moon Knight. Keith and I have argued about this several times. World's stupidest costume. At least they incorporated it. I wanted to see. No, he looks cool in the comic books. Then you think, like, what does he own? A dry cleaner? Wearing white out when you're hunting criminals is the stupidest costume you could have.
I'm assuming it's unstable molecules, okay? I mean, I don't see why that's not an acceptable explanation for why it never gets dirty.
Yeah, you know, even if you accept that, you're still wearing white and you're not bulletproof.
And the dude can't he can't fight crime after Labor Day. it's a run, like, it's really not, he hasn't thought this through. I can't believe you said back in the 90s that was your favorite Moon Knight.
20 years ago.
Yeah, but still St. Kevin did it in the 80s. So that's like now we're done.
I wonder how much my Stephen Pratt Moon Knight number 50 is worth now. I seem to remember paying a pretty penny for that back in the day.
Was it foil embossed?
Yes, it was foil embossed.
Foil embossed. Hologram cover?
No, just foil, actually, I think. It was right when it was like Rob Liefeld's last issue. Stephen Pratt was doing the art or something, and he was going to be the next big thing.
They really definitely missed out if they did not make a glow-in-the-dark Moon Knight cover.
Yeah, man, I bet they did, though. Don't you think it would have had to?
I don't know, I had a big collection of glow-in-the-dark covers. It was my thing for a while. That I...
Excuse me doing research.
Chris is going to look this up for a moment. Yeah, I really dug that run. It was just, you know, it was funny that someone asked me what the point of the run was. I'm like, well, it's six self-contained stories. I know that's kind of weird these days.
The point of any run is to tell good stories. I don't see why that's something that people ever have to defend. And it is weird the extent to which you do have to these days.
Yeah, I was talking to someone today about, I was talking to someone who was questioning the, you know, why do people get so caught up on continuity? And I said, why do companies get caught up on it? And I said, well, there's a reality of the people, the bulk of buyers want it. The self-contained non-continuity stories don't sell well. People use phrases like, does it count? Does it matter? How does this fit? And it's a bit jarring sometimes when you read something that doesn't fit or doesn't build some kind of larger narrative. It's just doing its own thing.
I generally think that continuity is best approached as a series of bendable rules and not as not strict, absolute guidelines that dictate how everything must be. I know a lot of people who treat it like that. That gives you, the maximum freedom to be true to a character or a property, at the same time giving you, you know, the ability to tell unique new stories without too much constraint. And I say that as a staunch Trekkie who feels the need to just explain everything. But, I mean, my favorite thing in the world is Star Trek, and it breaks its own rules all the time.
Well, and there's only, the four seasons of Enterprise and the two movies are the only thing in the current continuity.
I'm sorry?
And the four seasons of Enterprise and the two movies are the only thing in continuity.
Oh, don't make his head explode.
No, they're parallel. that's official. They're parallel. It's an alternate 1985. But the old one wasn't destroyed. God, I don't even want to think about
they're not continuing it, so it might as well have been destroyed.
Sorry, what was that, Brian?
if Deep Space Nine doesn't count, my life is meaningless. I have a Ben Sisko bust on my desk right now.
He does, actually. Which is one of the times
from my wheelchair. That's the death of Jennifer Sisko.
Right now he's having the reaction of a pre New 52 fan right now. But it's gotta be. That's awesome. It's all good. It's not. It hasn't been destroyed. It's in a pocket universe. It's all good. It's safe. Oh, I bet you you put your Blu-rays in, they will still play. That's the way that works.
Will they?
But have you? Well, in fairness, have you checked?
Have
you put in the DVDs since the Star Wars and the Star Trek reboot?
Well, I don't need the DVDs, but I have Netflix, and I'm actually just wrapping up a run on Deep Space Nine as we speak. I've got like 4 episodes left.
But will you continue to do a Voyager? That's the question.
Hold on, no. Okay.
He's okay with a Voyager being out of context.
So I watched all of Voyager straight through about 2 years ago, and then I'm like, okay, well, now I'm just going to watch all of it. So I started at Enterprise, watched all of Enterprise, watched all of the original series, watched all the original series movies, watched all the Next Generation.
You're just about to come
back watch, more. And then alternated between the Next Generation and Deep Space Nine while they were concurrent. And I'm about to wrap up like 650 straight episodes of Star Trek. This is not healthy behavior.
Is Babylon 5 in Netflix yet? You can.
I'm sorry?
Is Babylon 5
in
Netflix?
No, unfortunately it's not.
It was in Netflix, and I got through the middle of the first season before they took it down. I was livid.
It's never on Netflix.
It was on Netflix in 2011.
Oh, okay.
Because I remember when they took it down, I was absolutely just fucking furious. Because I was finally starting to enjoy it.
And about halfway through the first season, yeah, that's when it starts hitting some ground, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the first few episodes are just kind of like, okay, I mean, I'm meeting the people, but then I'm starting to, like, it started to grab me. So, as you can see, I love space.
Babylon 5, Bruce Boxleitner in space. Like, that's a catch right there.
And hopefully we can sustain Dirk Benedict in the 25th century quality.
Right. Anything above that is, like, really... That right there. Anything below that, don't even bother reading. But as long as it's above the level of Dirk Benedict in the 20th century.
That's like, yeah, that's rock bottom.
That's the mean right there, as far as...
What can I say?
How about you, Brian? Do you get a chance to read... do you read a lot of comics regularly?
I got back into it this year after being... kind of an irregular reader. I would sort of pick up trades of older stuff irregularly for a long time because I just didn't have any money. And so this year when I got really serious into writing comics again, I've been doing it because I've been writing irregularly that whole time as well. So this year I decided I was going to like really make that a priority. And so I'm like, well, I should probably start reading again. So what am I reading right now? Brubaker's Fade Out is phenomenal. That's a really interesting book. I'm loving Dan Slott's Silver Surfer, which is amazing because I used to never give a shit about the Silver Surfer at all. And this is, it's kind of just Doctor Who. Like, that's the really fun thing about it. It's kind of just Doctor Who, and I can't complain about that. Lumberjanes is a blast. Ms. Marvel, Captain Marvel, Amazing Spider-Man, Witches. Witches infuriates me because it's basically a short story I wrote in college that I've been thinking of like turning into a not in college, just after college, which I've been thinking of adapting into a comic, and then I read Witches and I'm like, well, shit. Like, it's sort of the same thing. Like, this teenager moves to a small town and gets caught up in this sort of local history with all this like supernatural sort of pagan elements to it. I can now never write that comic. It really pisses me. He's also doing it a lot better than I would have, so I can't really complain. What? Is it controversial to say I'm not as good a writer as Scott Snyder?
Don't be so hard on yourself, then.
That's just mean to Scott Snyder. God, what else am I fucking
We love Scott Snyder.
He's great.
He's a Canadian treasure. He's not Canadian.
Wicked Divine's phenomenal.
I just got into that over the holidays, actually.
It's so friggin' good.
It showed up on a couple of lists for best books, and there's a lot of the Image stuff that I get that I try the first issue. Try the first issue of almost everything from Image, because most of them end up coming up free on Comixology. And I didn't get into it, and then it showed up on some lists from folks that I really respect with their opinion. And, I'm like, okay, I'm going to give this a few more issues. And, yeah, really got into it the second go.
I mostly followed Matt Wilson there. I don't know how many people follow a colorist to a book.
Not enough.
Well, he's a really talented guy, and he's personally one of the most pleasant people I've ever met. I was a big fan of his work on Wonder Woman, and so I saw he was doing Wicked Divine, and he's done right by me, and he's made some contacts for me, put me in touch with some people, and so I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to check out this book, can't hurt, and it's phenomenal.
It is a really good book, and there's an Image Humble Bundle on right now that has the volume one, so the first five issues in it.
I just got an Image Humble Bundle.
I thought I was going to make it through a podcast with Bond without buying stuff.
Yeah, I bought it today, so I know it's still on. But it had, it had some really great stuff, and a lot of like first volumes of it's like 300 comics or something. If you get the 20 buck value or level or something, because it's got like the first compendium of Walking Dead. The first 48 issues of Walking Dead are in it. It's a crazy bundle, yeah.
I wish I can't do it, though. I don't have it right now.
You know, oh, well. Add that as an incentive level really quick on your Kickstarter. Yeah.
But,
For $30, you get a digital copy of Andrew Jackson in Space, and you get to buy the Humble Bundle for Brian.
Dream a dream.
One available.
I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out what the hell else I'm reading these days. I'm reading a ton. I just read the first five issues of Deadly Class.
That's another one that I didn't care for the first issue, and now it's showing up on all these best of lists.
Yeah,
it's actually quite good. I didn't like the first issue either.
I found the first issue really gripping. I'm kind of surprised that. You guys both had that reaction.
Oh. Different people, different stuff. But...
Vampires will do that to us every time, so.
Again?
Vampires?
Volume 1 in that Humble Bundle. My favorite book of last year, actually, is in that bundle, Alex and Ada.
Oh, I got that. So, actually, I do have this Humble Bundle. I have the... I don't have one with hundreds of comics in it. Mine has, like, 40-some-odd books in it. I have the Alex and Ada. I haven't read it yet. I'm still working through it.
I love that book.
God Hates Astronauts on it, which is an insane fucking read.
And is the one in the bundle, is that the volume that was done through Kickstarter? Like, the first volume?
Yeah, I guess, because I have the first two issues of the Image, the new Image stuff, and it's not that.
Oh, okay, great. So I was looking for that, so that's true.
It's different.
It's not my usual thing, but I read that first issue of the new series, and it was just the craziest thing. And I every page I went, this has just gotten crazier when I turned the page. So, yeah.
Admiral Tyke eating a cheeseburger. I mean... That's the most brilliant.
That's my.
I think comics might be done. I think we may have taken comics as far as they can go when you have two characters named Tiger Eating a Cheeseburger. And they're both tigers eating a cheeseburger.
That's my new thing is give me the craziest thing that can happen. Now that movies have co-opted so many of the characters that we used to love, now it's time for comics to go even further. Do that stuff you could never put in a movie because no one's going to give you $2 million, $20 million to make that story. Make it the craziest damn thing.
At the same time, when I first read God Hates Astronauts, I went looking for a Coles Notes version because it is a very God. There's a lot of stuff going on there.
Sorry, what?
There's a lot of stuff going on in that book. I need a Coles Notes to.
Oh, gotcha.
To get through God Hates Astronauts.
Yeah, there's a lot happening. It's very hard. It's not an easy book.
No. Give me Elephant Men. Or Injustice. Or even the new Mortal Kombat I like.
Oh, I didn't try them all.
The volume I read included a suggested voice actor guide. like who he wants you to imagine the characters sounding like.
Oh, that's awesome. Taking
John C. Reilly's in there. I can't. For like the main character.
Dream casting always involves John C. Reilly.
Well, of course.
I don't like that they've used him in a Marvel movie now because it limits what other characters he can play in a Marvel movie. I was hoping he'd be Star-Lord's dad.
You're hoping he still might be.
He still might be. Yeah, and that's I try catching up a bunch of stuff over Christmas. I certainly hit some stuff that I stopped. There's going to be a bit of soul searching here in the next couple of months because I'm primarily I don't read a lot of Marvel and read a lot of DC and then the bulk of what I read is outside of the big two.
That's become more and more the case for me too.
But DC is ending. We're going to call this the news, Chris. We haven't done a news segment in two months, maybe. DC is ending about half of its line. It'll be down to about 32 books come June, plus whatever they're going to add. They announced the ending of 12 or 14 books as of the March issues, and then April May is the Convergence event, which is a self-contained.
Hey, what the hell is that?
Have you heard about Secret Wars?
Yeah, same thing. It's that.
Yeah, basically, okay. The two companies are doing almost what on the surface at least seems identical events. With Secret Wars, there's a battle world planet, and it is assembled from chunks of alternate realities. So you're going to see New Universe and Ultimate Universe and some elsewhere, some what if stuff, and
yeah, I remember their string of comings.
Yeah, and they're all based on the old events. So Old Man Logan is there, and all these different events that they did over the years, Infinity War, and those are all going to be like mashed up into this like 4 or 5 month event. Completely differently, Convergence is about this planet that's made up of chunks of old continuities. So there's stuff from pre-New 52. So there's stuff around like 2000. I think it's about 2009 is week one. Week two is stuff from 0 Hour 90s. So circa 1995. Week three is.
You really want to revisit 0 Hour?
Zero Hour was actually kind of the peak of DC for me. I collected from Crisis, and then 0 Hour was kind of where the wave hit and started.
Wasn't that the Hypertime bullshit?
No, Hypertime comes later. Comes later with Morrison.
Oh God! At least you didn't insult Millennium. That would have taken an hour.
That'd be fighting me. And then the next one's kind of like pre Crisis, and then the last week is earlier than that. But yeah, like Convergence is self-contained over a 2 month event. there'll be some stuff that bleeds over into whatever they're doing in June. They haven't said what happens when they come back. What we know is that all of the weeklies end before Convergence. They actually all three weeklies end on April 1st. The final issue of Multiversity comes out on April 1st, and the first issue of Convergence comes out on April 1st.
Wouldn't it be awesome April 1st both companies do Amalgam again?
See, that was my dream. You joke. Amalgam is one of my fondest memories. I would kill to bring back Dark Claw. Actually, for being serious, really honest, they screwed it up. It should have been Iron Bat.
Today it would be Iron Bat, for sure.
See, what you need is Iron Bat, and then instead of that Iron Lantern bullshit, the Silver Lantern. Silver Surfer and Green Lantern. That's so elegant.
All right, so you've already put it to you. This was actually a question at our recent Calgary Comic Creator Summit, was invent your own Amalgam character.
Well, I've got two entries.
Didn't get there.
Silver Lantern.
Silver Lantern. All right.
See, the way I figure it, he's like, he's the herald of Galactoa. Yes, the planet that eats other planets. I think it writes itself.
I kind of like Galactide.
The greatest creation of all time is, of course, Lobo the Duck.
Oh, Amalgam. I'm trying to get your head around Amalgam actually happening today. Right? So there's all the suits from Warner Brothers showing up with all the suits from Disney. I mean, as it was, I mean, DC and Marvel put that thing together, and they still couldn't actually, you know, have a decisive winner because couldn't let that happen.
I remember hearing, fuck it.
And it really fell apart when Lobo fought Wolverine, and they had to go with the votes. That was the point. It just sort of.
We stuffed all those ballots.
Why didn't they then merge Lobo and Wolverine? I mean, Lobo means wolf.
That, you know, that would have been cool.
They could have just called him Wolferine.
Lone Wolferine. I like it.
They could have called him Logo.
But if we do it again, we still can't do that because Wolverine's dead. And will remain so.
By the time the lawyers get it worked out.
Radio can't hear it, see me. I just did the air quotes for will remain so.
We on the podcast, we like to refer to people to characters like that as currently dead. that's our generous.
Uncle Ben just showed up in Spider-Verse, so why the hell not?
Who did?
Uncle Ben.
Uncle Ben.
I have an insane dream that if they ever, in their foolishness, let me write Spider-Man, I'm going to bring back Uncle Ben as a time-traveling cyborg named Vengeance. Or possibly Bendetta.
With great power comes great waiting until it all works out.
With great power comes great vengeance.
Did you just say Vengeance?
Yeah, Benjamin.
Nice.
That's the name of the character. My enemy, my uncle.
Really? And you could fight Mayhem.
No, he fights Spider-Man. And you're not saving.
You need that cover where Benjamin's uniform is in the trash can and it says Benjamin no more. I've already given you that's issue 10.
It would just be a romp through the history of Spider-Man. Benjamin would be traveling through time trying to kill Spider-Man at various points in his history. And each book would be done, like, if there's sort of this pastiche of the era. I can't wait till you get to Todd McFarlane Vengeance.
Doom. 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 I watched someone live tweet reading the McFarlane's first five issues of the one he wrote, the Spider-Man he wrote, and it was like, this isn't so bad. Why do people? And then by the end of it, they're like, I don't even know what's going on anymore. What is even happening here?
What? The artist-driven era of comics was an interesting one.
Put a lot of brain power into that era.
I guarantee that most of the conversations in those quote writers' rooms were just, wouldn't it be cool if...
Yeah, pretty much. That's
And then they just did that for the next page.
and like, you know, that energy is great when you have two people. Like, you really need two people to make that work. Because, I mean, that was Kirby Lee. That was their dynamic.
The thing is,
one of them
has to know what they're doing.
Well, one of them has to take all that and then, you know, get rid of the junk and have the really cool idea. I mean, Stan Lee used to would like bring an artist in and say, "Here's my crazy idea," and then, you know, Ditko or Kirby would go off and then make it an actual story. But if you don't have that back and forth, then it's just, "Here's the crazy idea, and I'm already drawn."
And it made millions of dollars.
Rob Liefeld's Hawkman, or
absolutely
Hawk and Dove, or Grifter.
Oh my God. I remember when they did New 52, I remember seeing that there was a fucking Grifter book. And I was just mystified. I'm like, who is this motherfucker? Oh, that's a Rob Liefeld guy. Why does he have a flagship title?
He was a Jim Lee guy, actually. But Liefeld...
Jim Lee guy, and he had an awesome run when Steve Seagal was writing him. I love that run.
Oh, that was good.
It was a John Woo thing. It was awesome.
Our friend Matt from Kamikaze has this theory that the DC universe rejected Wildstorm and all of these Wildstorm things. It just flat out refused to let them be integrated in the DC universe. the time they're actually working is at Future's End, which is my jam. I love that book because it is like, it's DC, it's heavy continuity, and it is, again, like super duper crazy. Like, it's Batman Beyond fighting like robot plastique. It's awesome. It's like just out of control.
Sweet. With the end of the Azzarello run on Wonder Woman, I'm not reading any DC books. That was the one. I was reading that in like the first like 10 issues of Action. Now I'm like almost completely out of the loop for DC. I mean, as out of loop as you can be as someone who lives on the comic Twitter. But, I mean, you know what's going on. You spend all day looking at comics Twitter.
Keith, have you read it yet? We seem to have peer pressure working for us on this. Have you read Wonder Woman yet?
Azzarello, yes. I read it when it finished.
So,
yeah, there was a sale right around the time it was finishing. So
that's a friggin' masterpiece.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it stumbled a bit around kind of the late teens and then hit a pace again and did a, like, ended strong. It stumbled a bit about halfway through, but I really enjoyed the run and I read.
Well, I mean, that's how middles of long stories always are. I mean, in my main project, Stronghold. I've been kind of, it's only a 12 issue story, but I've been in the middle of it. I'm in the middle of scripting issue 8 right now. But the whole middle act, just keeping everything moving in the direction it needs to go, is it's always a challenge.
Yeah, I really did enjoy it when there's a lot of these runs that once I hear they've set, they've announced what the end date and what the end time is going to be, I'm definitely not going to get into it until they're done.
I'll fall behind,
and then I did it on the Massive. I read for the first four or five. I started falling behind, and then I was so far behind that they said, "Well, a number 30 is going to be the last one." I'm like, well, there's no way I'm going to start reading it and read to like 22. I will just wait until the whole thing's finished, and that's what Wonder Woman was. Yeah. Coincidentally, reading the Massive right now.
Reading what?
Reading The Massive right now, Brian Wood's The Massive.
The Massive?
Oh, it's fantastic. It's are you familiar with Brian Wood?
Yes, I've got like a million volumes of DMZ.
it is probably one of his works that's most like DMZ or Courier. It's Dark Horse, 30 issues just ended, post-apocalyptic. There has been an environmental apocalypse.
Like you do.
And It is about an environmental activist who had a kind of Greenpeace type ship that he would, and he had a activist crew, and then the environmental cataclysm happened and the world's totally different. But he still had this crew together, and he had two ships, the one he's on and then the ship called the Massive, which was their flagship. But during everything that happened during the crash, they lost the Massive. So the series starts where he's got the smaller ship and he's following.
Is it called the Not Quite So Massive?
I can't believe I've blanked on the name of the other ship, because it's not related to that. It's like, but yeah, it's like he's on the smaller ship and they're trying to recover the Massive. That's like the subtext of the series as he explores this. Like, same as DMZ, it's really about exploring this post-apocalyptic world.
Nice. That's the thing I really liked about it. It had a plot, but it was kind of all over the place in a good way.
Yeah, and certainly DMZ just like it wanders sometimes, and there's some stuff you're like, you're not even sure why you're looking at this. But it was just that, like, it wasn't. You realize later on that it's not Matty Roth's story in DMZ. It's the story of the world, and Matty Roth is just your lens for it. And so sometimes Maddie's in a place that's kind of seems strange, but it's really about telling you something about the world.
Yeah.
I am the only one who read the first volume and didn't want to continue on after the first volume. It was just
you long. Might be the only one.
Yeah, no, I haven't found another one.
It's nothing. There's nothing out there that is for everyone. I know that. Brian Wood. Like, I could not get into Northlanders, and I know one of our regular hosts.
And I know several people who have called for your head for that one.
I haven't read it, so can't speak.
Yeah, it just does not grab me. It's never connected with me.
Actually, Keith, I'll throw this out there. Are you surprised how much of the Star Wars stuff was put up on Comicsology when Marvel got the rights?
I did not think
the Brian Wood Star Wars. I thought it would be ignored for at least a little while.
Oh, is it? But is it on
there?
It's
up there to buy right away.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that was. I had seen that the I'd seen quite a few of that, because all of the Long Time Ago collections. Which are those are the reprints of Marvel's original run. I knew they had put those up, and I saw a few of the Shadows of the Empire and a few of those things, but I hadn't realized the Brian Wood was on there already. I know Dark Horse raced that one out, because the Brian Wood Star Wars only ended in about September or October, and then they raced it to get it out as a trade so that they could have it in their stock. So it could be something that could be on their backlist as well as Marvel's. Another cool run, like not a perfect run, but a really cool one. And we're recording this on Star Wars Day. This is the day that the new Star Wars comic from Marvel has come out. Early reports are it is the highest selling comic in 20 years. It is between all of the. There's word that Loot Crate took some. There's a lot of retailer exclusive covers. There is somewhere in the ballpark of 60 or 70 different covers.
I need to talk about Star Wars retail and just variant covers for a second right now. I was at my LCS today, right? Picking up two of my comics because I'm poor. And they had a Star Wars variant cover that was on sale for $450. I shop at a small local comic shop. I'm in New York, and our big store is Midtown.
Yeah.
Right? And Midtown sets prices, and they decided that this particular cover was going to sell for $500. It's a black and white cover of a joke. it's a joke. It's a funny cover.
Is it the Homecoming? Is it the one that
there's like an anthropomorphic rabbit on it?
Yeah,
I think might be Usagi Yojimbo.
No,
but I don't know.
It's a I think it's nicknamed something like the Homecoming cover, and it's that rabbit was one of the characters introduced in the Marvel run after Empire Strikes Back because they couldn't use Han Solo.
Oh, yes!
So they introduced this, like, incredibly terrible anthropomorphic rabbit. And it was right around the time, like, the black and white boom was going on, so there was terrible.
Yeah, that makes sense, because they're trying to keep him out. They're trying to keep him out of the book.
So, yeah, that's the gag, is that it's...
$450. It's got a cover of $4.99.
That is insane.
It's a $5 book that I'm pretty sure that they paid that Mike, that you know...
Well, they would have had to buy, like, you know, 750 copies or something to get that one copy. Like, that's how those retailer incentives work. The more you buy, you get, like, it goes up. Like, when you buy 400, you get this cover. You buy 500, you get this cover and this cover.
Nope. I want to stress, my comic shop is a hole in the wall. There's not 750 comics in that building. And I'm not, like, exaggerating. It's teeny tiny. It shares the space with a weird socialist bookstore.
That's the second best comic store merge I've ever heard.
It's great.
It's
the best comic shop I've ever been to. It's Carmine Street Comics. They're amazing. But $450 fucking dollars! How is that?
There are something like 60 or 70 variant covers for this book. But with all of the variant, like loot
comic store slash dry cleaners,
with all
slash
like the loot crate
craft
and
shop
and the ever, like, you know, people that are like companies that are buying large volumes of them, it is rumored that this book is going to ship a million copies.
You do know though that in 20 years we're gonna look back on this and be like, that was hologram foil covers of that generation.
Absolutely.
We're going to look back on it with the same kind of just like utter befuddlement. So you're telling me that someone actually bought 65 copies of this one book so they could have every single fucking cover? And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, someone did that.
And our generation, Chris of my generation, thought that X-Men number one with the 5 variant covers was insane. That no one has. The record for comics though is Mars Attacks, which I think had 85 covers. Mars Attacks.
That's
number
not
one.
Defensible.
Mars Attacks number did, one. They weren't variants. They were equal distribution copies. And what they did was each cover was one of the original cards from the Mars Attacks set.
Well, see, that's unique. That's an interesting gimmick. That's not just a naked grab for sales.
Didn't Justice League beat that though?
No. Justice League was 52 covers. 52. Yeah, 52 because it was all 50 states plus a international version, which was just the American flag, and then there was a.
They did 50. What?
Yep, Justice League of America. We came out last.
What were the different covers? Were they just state fucking flags?
Yeah.
That's a lot of seals on blue.
Yep. It was.
That's the least interesting visual subject matter I can imagine. Like, something like 36 states have the flag that's just the state seal on a blue field.
The cover is a whole bunch of the heroes, and it's a model. It's modeled from the Iwo Jima flag raising. So it's all the heroes holding the flag, and then the flag is like flying in the air.
God.
And so they would just replace the flag in every.
I'm sorry. I'm like having a really difficult time imagining the Justice League raising the flag of New Hampshire.
Well, when you put it that way.
That's what other way is there? Nothing quite says dramatic like raising the flag of Delaware over the field of battle.
Didn't Canada get one of those too, though? Because they were launching.
At least that's a country.
Justice League United as well.
Justice League United is the book that replaced. So that was about a year later. We didn't get 10 province covers, which is not really surprising.
I would have bought them all.
I would have bought them all. I would have. Maybe Captain Canuck will do that, but. We didn't get that from Justice League United. They even chickened out that it was going to be called Justice League Canada, and they chickened out. So,
yeah, that would have been great.
I was pretty excited for it, but Oh, well, I was happy, though, that the first arc and the first trade is called Justice League Canada. And then after that, the second, they're into the second arc now, and the logo still has the Canadian flag in it. So I thought that was good. I was afraid they were going to drop that.
I just looked up these stupid Justice League variants. They're the ugliest damn motherfucking things.
I expect to see one of them.
I looked up my home state, and it's just... They didn't do any work on it. They just literally just like photoshopped that shit in there.
Yeah, they kind of phoned it in from It's not even like really good Photoshop. Like, it's not like they put a little wave in it or anything. It's just kind of
nope, they just stuck it in there.
Might as well be on
but
with the
that sticker. That said, I meet a guy, I go into his collection and he's got them all hanging on the wall. I'm gonna be impressed.
Well, they should be hanging on the wall, but in the shape of the United States.
Oh, yeah, of course. See, I thought that one went without saying.
So you've got to kind of, I mean, New England is a bit hard. You've got to really kind of layer them a bit.
No. I'll be impressed if I go into a place and they've got, you know, beautiful covers hanging up. Not just because they collect 52 copies of one fucking
they
book.
Have 52,
because
they have 52
really,
good.
They really
like,
desperate,
52
desperate
really great
flag
covers.
Of Idaho. And they couldn't find Idaho, and they paid $60 for the Idaho cover.
Rhode Island, $450. Who knew?
Can't even deal with this shit. We are a strange and mercurial subculture. We should be stopped. We should not be allowed to do these things.
And how many variant covers does Andrew Jackson in Space have?
One.
That's hardly even a variant. Huh? Your variant will be Andrew Jackson in Space or Andrew Jackson in Space the cover ripped off.
No. There's one variant. There's two covers.
Oh, two covers. One. Oh, okay. Awesome. We'll see
there's
now.
Two covers, one of which is a variant, and that's if we hit certain funding goals, and then I can afford to do that.
Well, let us turn to the subject at hand. Andrew Jackson in Space, currently on Kickstarter, and we're only about a week into your campaign.
Yeah,
so a week in. So, give us the next level of pitch after Andrew Jackson in Space.
I'm not sure what else there is. Okay. A little bit of history. Just a little bit. Just a couple of dates to put the.
So we're Canadian. So pretend he's not. Pretend he wasn't one of our presidents.
Are you saying that Canada doesn't have the same president?
Not always. It's not always. It's something to do with the Electoral College. Don't get into it.
I thought we had like an Andorra situation where whoever was president of us was automatically president of Canada. But anyway,
it's only if they win. It's only if they win the arm wrestling match with the Queen, then. We put their face on the money.
Let's not turn that into the episode where I tried to explain the Governor General to Americans for an hour.
Governor General.
Sorry, what was that?
Get it. You're just the ceremony. It's just a ceremonial representative of the Queen. There's all the shit the Queen would do if the Queen were here, but she's not. I get it.
That's a nice word.
Anyway,
I have a photo of myself with the Governor General of Canada in my office.
Which Governor General? Michel Jean, whoever the current one is.
The current one. Johnson. And so I have this photo, and it's just, you know, me shaking hands with the Governor General, and three different people in my work have asked if it's my dad. It's just me in a suit shaking.
Wow. You guys really take your relationship with Britain seriously, don't you? Pardon the monarch. Anyway. So Andrew Jackson was president, elected president of the United States in 1828. This takes place decades before that. So this isn't President Andrew Jackson in Space, this is young Andrew Jackson. So in 1801, Andrew Jackson wakes up 100,000 light years from home. He has no idea how he got there or why. He's just there and he's trying to get home. That's the pitch. It's a Lost in Space with Andrew Jackson. It's Doctor Who with Andrew Jackson. It's Indiana Jones with Andrew Jackson, kind of.
Now, who's working
but in
with
space.
Who's working with you on this, Brian?
My artist is a fellow Canadian, named Jason Smith.
Well, that's good. You're on the right track then.
My colorist is a guy who's honestly named Harry Saxon, like from Doctor Who.
Not a euphemism.
Doctor Who villain.
oh, it's a Doctor Who reference. There was no way I was getting.
Oh, he's. I just thought it was. He's in Britain.
I just thought it sounded like it. You know, it sounded like a double.
And my editor is Heather Antos, who recently put out the Unlawful Good anthology, or is about to put out. I don't know what the status on that is. I'm in that one too. Jason is just a phenomenal artist and an extraordinarily businesslike guy who has just poured so much work and effort and design into this. Like we went back and forth for weeks tweaking designs and logos and just getting the ship right, because I wanted the ship to be like, I wanted it to be our Millennium Falcon. Like it was going to be almost a character in the book itself. So I wanted to make sure we had the right look, an interesting silhouette, something that was always going to be identifiable. And I think he pulled it off. He hit the right kind of ugly. I was like, this is not going to be a pretty spaceship. It can't be a pretty spaceship. This is a junker piece of crap. This is just what he's got. That kind of thing. So.
And what's the format? What are we looking at for what your finished piece will be?
What do you mean?
20 page comic? Is that
what? Oh, yeah. It's a 20 page full color book.
Okay. And what kind of we always like to look at the incentives. Chris is a Kickstarter-aholic. As he said before we started recording, he has already backed your project, and then he's like, hey, that guy's going to be on the show.
you should back it at a higher level than you're currently backing it.
No, see, I got a rule, and you hit me where I live. The digital only incentives. You don't want my level.
You're saying you don't have a page. You don't want to own a page of original art.
No, I really frameable. I do not want to die in some sort of comic related avalanche. which is a possibility at this point. I like getting the story without anything else. And you got a great digital only for $15. You get, not only do you get Andrew Jackson, you get Stronghold and some other book. I don't even care. I'm going to read it. I'm going to love it. But
Brian,
for $15, that's the most bang for my buck. I'm happy with that. I think everyone should get that.
I want to talk for just a second about the some other book you don't care about. I'm really proud of that.
I only care because I haven't read it and I don't know what it's about. I'm just saying you had me at Stronghold.
I'm going to sell you on that other book. Awesome. It's a short. It's a 10-page short that I did with the same artist as Andrew Jackson in space. It's a black and white short. It's a horror comic. It's my first, probably, I guess more like my second attempt to kind of like try to do something that's a little like creepy and unsettling. It's called The Sisters. It's about a couple of fake psychics who are on their way to the 1893 Chicago World's Fair, and they get stranded in this podunk little town in Illinois where someone hires them to summon some sort of like local god, like some like legendary like Indian god thing. And it goes very badly. Very, very badly.
Well, now you have to.
I'm there with that. I can do that.
Well, you've got my magic words in there. A ship's anywhere in the world. That's a good one for me. Do you have any outside the box incentive levels?
Probably the most outside the box one is we have a tier where we'll give you a cameo in the book. And actually, I was going to offer one where we would make you the bad guy. And no one, we didn't have any bites on that, so I haven't set it up yet. I periodically, advertise that might be something I might want to do, but until I get some bites, I'm not sure I want to put it on the page.
You always do one crazy one.
It's just kind of an angry judge.
Like one available, $500. Right? I've seen ones where like they will fly to, they will go like spend a weekend with you. That was on Dave Sims' Cerebus Kickstarter, was that you could fly him to you. It was like supposed to be a retailer thing, but you could like fly Dave Sim to you. You had to pay us.
See, no one would pay, do that, like, no one cares about me. You're lucky my wife cares about me. She wouldn't do that. She wouldn't spend $5,000 to see me. I mean, that would be zany and all. Who would go for it?
I have gone 25 years without Andrew Jackson in a comic book, to my knowledge.
No, no, you have not. This is his second book in a year.
Really? That's what I'm asking. Okay. Is there some sort of comic book creator conference that created that Andrew Jackson throws a punch by Andrea Tsumi?
Tsurumi. Or Tsumori, like, or something
what,
like that.
What kind of magical cabal happened that in a year we have two books with Andrew Jackson? Is there a connective tissue between her?
That's the zeitgeist right there.
Yeah, Andrew Jackson is just all over popular culture.
This time next year, you will be so tired of seeing Andrew Jackson. There'll be the CW TV series about young Andrew Jackson.
The thing is, I could see that. I mean, there's already a Broadway musical about him. It's called Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson. It makes him an emo star.
I think
mostly it's just Andrew Jackson in tight pants. If that's what you're into, hey. I have one friend who I'm making a special variant cover for it that retitles the book Foxy President.
He does have amazing hair. I will say that. You look at the Kickstarter.
Yeah, you can thank Jason for that. I was just like, his hair, it has to be as much of a character as he is that he made that happen.
Fantastic hair.
But why? No, I mean, there was no meeting. There's no comic cabal.
There's no collusion whatsoever.
No collusion whatsoever. For me, what happened was this past summer, I was developing sort of an American history-themed Twilight Zone-style anthology called America Fantastica, where I was going to do, like, 2 to 3 issue stories and then completely reset every time. Because I'm a big history buff, and I'm a big American history buff. And I was like, this is a way for me to deal with everything from 1970s rock music to the fucking Lewis and Clark expedition.
So you're saying more in space? Awesome.
Lewis and Clark in space. That's a good pitch.
So this anthology sort of didn't come together the way I was wanting it to, because I wanted it to be where I was going to have a different artist every time for every story. So I wanted to bring in other writers, and it just wasn't coming together. And so I started thinking, okay, well, which of these stories on my little list of plots am I really interested in? And I saw a little list. I saw a little entry on my list that said Andrew Jackson versus robots. And I'm like, all right, I can get, you know, 7-8 pages out of that. And it's turned into a 4-issue comic book, because I'm like, well, why is Andrew Jackson in space? Why is he fighting robots? Oh, because he's in space. Well, why is he in space? Because he woke up one day in space. So what's he doing in space? Well, he's trying to get home. So why is he fighting robots? Because they're stopping him. And I'm thinking to myself, this kind of has some legs. I started, like, developing, you know, what happened, how he got there, what he was up to. And from one point, I just had a short story where he and a couple of friends were, like, doing an Indiana Jones kind of run through a tomb for an artifact. And they were fighting, like, 1,000-year-old robots that were defending the tomb. And that's not the story in the book, sadly.
That'll be the sequel. Andrew Jackson and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
I mean, you laugh.
I do laugh.
But, and so it grew up. It grew up into an idea that I thought had some legs to it. But no, the whole thing is almost certainly just coming out of a mutual love that Tsurumi and I have for American history. And Jackson is just such a... Okay, I'm not going to say he's not a problematic figure. Jackson is a very problematic figure, but he's a fascinating guy to spend, in whose head you can spend some time, because he's a complete lunatic. And I don't mean that in, like, a fun way. I mean, he's a dangerous, violent man.
Well, that's one of the things that that I was curious about was you have a wide variety of presidents to choose from. Certainly, like, there's a lot of characters as far as presidents go. Why Andrew Jackson? Why not Thomas Jefferson?
Thomas Jefferson in space would be the most boring book.
Warren J. Harding in space.
I just want to say this about Jefferson. I'm a Virginian. Thomas Jefferson is worshipped as a god in Virginia. George Washington is from Virginia. We don't give a shit. We care about Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson in space would just, like, what would that even be? He was just kind of a condescending intellectual. I mean, that's me. I don't want to do me in space. I can only think of a couple of presidents who I could actually, like, work out this basic kind of adventure story with. And they are out there. You could do it with Lincoln, but we already have
Roosevelt would be awesome. Either of the Roosevelts.
TR could pull it off. Teddy Roosevelt could put it off. Although at some point Andrew Jackson is going to fight Time Roosevelt. That's happening. It's gonna be a short, but I am doing that. That's on the plate. Not a joke. You could do it with TR. You could do it with Ulysses S. Grant. You could do it with James K. Polk. But I mean, you could probably do it with Bill Harrison. But other than that, you get a lot of, you know, effete Eastern lawyers. You know, if you're going to do Andrew Jackson, if you're going to do any president in space, you need a guy who you think could survive. My favorite president is John Adams. John Adams would be eaten by bears within minutes.
Yet make an extremely good single issue comic.
That's like a one page.
John Adams being eaten by space bears. A 20-page comic.
I think maybe as a backup story.
Put
that in as a stretch goal.
I may have to do that. I'll draw it myself because I can't draw.
Start practicing this.
I'll be like, if we get to $3,000 today, I will draw a 6-page comic of John Adams being eaten by space bears. Enjoy. Good God, that's dark. But anyway, so why Jackson? More than any of the others, Jackson is kind of emblematic of his era. He's sort of this, represents this kind of swaggering bravado that's just indicative of the country that he helped build. Like, we don't think a lot about Jackson as a foundational figure in American history, and we should. If I can get into some, you know, some historical, viscera here.
I love that. I think it was on your Twitter that I saw this, like, this note of, yeah, I know a lot about Andrew Jackson. Please don't tell me stuff about him. Please don't correct my.
I'm well aware of what he did. I get a little pushback, and I'm not surprised I got pushback. I need to make a disclaimer real quick. I am not pro Jackson. I don't like Andrew Jackson. He is representative of virtually everything I despise in America, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to work with him. He built the country. Like, this is what I was saying a second ago. You don't hear about that, but Jackson is the guy who, like, sort of cemented what America means. And I don't mean that in, like, a joke way. I don't mean that in a hyperbolic way. Prior to Jackson, the government was almost exclusively limited to upper-level educated elites. Jackson was the guy who brought it down to the common man. Jackson's whole deal was the enfranchisement and the bringing to the table of white yeoman farmers and telling common people that they not only had a voice and had and deserved a voice in government, but that they had the ability to take control. He was the first president who's able to, like, win by appealing to people's basic instincts. I mean, his whole campaign image was he's a hard-drinking son of a bitch. I mean, he was a guy who ran for president based on the fact that he was a hard-drinking son of a bitch and won. He did horrible things in office. I'm not going to pretend that he didn't. I'm at no point am I here to defend Jackson or to glorify Jackson or to say that we, you know, ought to look at it from his side. But he's such a foundational figure, and the extent to which we, you know, American society tries to kind of politely pretend he didn't exist these days kind of drives me crazy, because that kind of darkness is something that we own. That's something we have to own. You know, and I don't think forgetting it helps. I've gotten a lot of pushback on whether or not this was a smart thing to do. People think that I'm trying to glorify Jackson. I'm just playing around in history, you know, and my whole goal here is to just get into the head of this problematic guy. I'm not at all interested in making any apology for him. You know, I just want to take a look at this particular insane, resourceful man and put him in another context and see what happens. And the whole thing kind of started off as a joke, you know, with just Andrew Jackson versus robots, because he's got that image of being America's fightingest president, you know? And so it seemed like he'd be the kind of guy who you'd want to fight robots. But there's just such a richness to him psychologically that really attracts me as a writer. I had one argument with someone I was talking with about doing a cover for the book. I had not an argument, I had discussion, where he was like, it sounds like you're trying to humanize Jackson, like you want people to empathize with him. And I'm like, well, of course I do. I'm a writer. I'm not here to write a comic book about a mustache-twirling villain. You know, I'm not Stephen King. I talk shit about Stephen King, but I love him. Where was I? But, okay.
Mustache
I'm not, twirl. I don't want to write.
Mustache,
I don't want to write
that bastard mustache twirl in Stephen King. That's what he is.
I don't want to do like a one-dimensional character. That the only thing you get out of a book is we should not like this guy we already don't like. You know? Like, who's going to do a movie or a book? I hate to bring it to Hitler. Who's going to do a book about Adolf Hitler where the message is he was a bad guy? Like, we don't need to hear that. We know that Hitler was a bad guy.
Right? If he's eaten by bears, I'm in.
Well, there's a
whole graph. There's a whole graph novel in this. Every four pages, but, another historical figure gets eaten by a space bear.
It's 400 pages long. People you don't like being eaten by space bears. But I mean, I can think of two primary cinematic treatments of Adolf Hitler that made it their point to humanize the character and have you empathize with him. And that's Max, which is a 2002 movie starring John Cusack. And Downfall, which is, of course, famous for the Xbox meme. Mm. You know, all of them are portraits of this figure who we all despise, but they're sympathetic portraits in that they're taking him seriously as a human being. And so what I want to do is take Jackson seriously as a human being. And so I've removed him from his context, where he was a staunch white supremacist, inveterate racist guy who did commit something that's arguably genocide, you know? And I've taken him out of that context and I put him in this other situation where he doesn't have power, and I'm trying to see what sort of man we have underneath the historical record. So that's, like, my overall mission, if you can say that I have one, in doing a comic book in which Andrew Jackson is fighting space aliens. I'm enjoying playing around in this guy's head, because he's a lunatic who did horrible things, and I want to see, well, who's this guy? If that makes any sense. And I've talked for a while now. I'm going to shut up. I ran.
Now, is there more than 22 pages here? Is there going to be an issue, too?
It's 20 pages.
If and when.
Because I have to pay people per page, so there's 20 pages, not 22. Do not overcharge me. I have a 4-issue arc mapped out, starting in issue 1. And I have probably 6 or 7 total stories. I want to say six stories planned out at various stages. So, I mean, I could wrap this thing up and say that I'm completely finished with this as a thing. If I did like 20, 24 issues. But at this point, my focus is on issues 1 through 4. Pardon.
All right. And do you have anything else tonight, Chris?
No, other than Ralph Klein in space sounds like a good idea to me, but
niche.
Nobody's going to get niche, that.
John A. McDonald, Canada's drinkingest prime minister in space.
Oh, I would love to do McDonald. He has crazy hair.
the legends of John McDonald showing up loaded for Parliament. And he does have crazy hair. There's talk about hair. Talk about hair as a character.
If there was a prime minister, I would send it to space. It'd be Trudeau. Just because he's just. That's another guy in whose head I wouldn't mind spending a little time, because he just seemed completely psychotic. And you just kept putting him in office.
Jean Chrétien in space. So he's our only prime minister that did his own security. Famously choked out a protester. And
his wife was pretty tough too. Yeah. She fought off a couple burglars in the.
On a more serious note, I do have a vague plan at some point to do a comic biography of Lyndon Johnson.
That talk about nuts. Like I was watching. I can't remember. I was watching a movie with my wife, and it was a bit in it about Lyndon Johnson. And he seems like kind of an asshole. And I'm like, and I said, you know, Lyndon Johnson, like the most, my favorite story of Lyndon Johnson is how he used to hold press conferences while he was on the toilet. It was a total power trip.
I don't believe it was he was holding press conferences while he was on the toilet. He would berate his underlings while he was on the toilet. With the door open. He wouldn't make them come in, but he'd be on the shitter just like screaming at them. There's also this famous moment where he had just gotten like an appendectomy or something, and so he's being interviewed by the press after he gets out, and he goes, "Hey, you guys want to see the scar?" And he just lifts up his fucking shirt. Can you imagine if George Bush had done that? The world would have never forgotten.
it was a different time. The press used to keep their mouth shut about stuff like that.
this picture was famous back in the day.
All right, well, we're going to wrap it up. The Kickstarter is Andrew Jackson in Space. It is running right now and runs through till February 7. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. So you got time to get in. Pick your incentive level. And anything else you want to say before we wrap this up, Ryan? Last pitch.
Maybe this is a naive question, but do puppies have Christmas?
Huh.
Bad joke. It always flaws. I don't know why I always expect that one to work. It never works. It never gets a laugh.
I would assume that they celebrate in some way, because I've also heard that all dogs go to heaven.
There you go.
Yes, it depends on that.
No, I don't have a final pitch. I'm tired.
And my cat is screeching because all cats go to hell. That's where they came from. That's where they're going back to, with my hellhound kitten. I am Keith. You can follow me on Twitter at CubReporterK. Follow We Talk Podcast at We Talk Podcast. Also like our Facebook page and stay up to date with all things We Talk Comics and We Talk Wrestling. Chris, any last thoughts?
Nothing. If you want to talk to me about comics, it's Chris_WeTalk on Twitter. And, keep me informed. Tell me what books you like. Keep me informed with Kickstarter, because I don't check Kickstarter every day. And I kind of wish I did. But I don't have that kind of time. So if you got a Kickstarter project that you want me to back, and I have to tell you, it's low-hanging fruit, please give me a shout. Specifically, that's an easy $5 for you right there. just let me know. Get me involved. I love this crap.
And the latest Kickstarter from our friend Hope Nicholson just funded today, which is a
great. That's Moonshot.
Congratulations,
isn't it?
To Hope Nicholson.
Yeah, it's a collection of original stories about First Nations characters. So I really excited.
Oh, I saw that. I saw that on the listing. Very nice. High production values too. It looks like.
Oh yeah, Hope does amazing work. Yeah. Her stuff is always top notch. All right. Andrew Jackson in space. Make it happen. And we are OUT.
Cool.